And welcome to Through the Mist with me, your host, Owen. This is the Void and Verse Days podcast, where we look at the law and try to understand how it all works. In this episode, we'll be looking at...
Gaul.
Hello, everybody. Hi, everybody. Hello. Welcome back. Yes. Woo, woo, woo. Woo. Another episode. Another month has passed. How's everyone doing? Great. Love to hear it. Thanks for joining us. We have someone joining us today, someone new who's never joined us before. So say hello, new person.
Wait, I've never been on an episode of Through the Mist? That feels impossible.
No.
Wait, really?
Yeah.
No, I swear to God I've been on an episode of Through the Mist before.
No.
What?
You've been featured through messages, but like the people haven't heard your voice. People haven't heard your voice in an episode yet. So.
Oh, that's crazy. I guess you've just been on a bunch of See Me Brain episodes and also in my house. So.
Yes. That is true.
Okay, cool. Well, happy to be here. I don't know how much I have to contribute today because I feel like we're talking about something particularly confusing, but I'm happy to be here for the journey.
That's fine. And just so everyone's aware, we call this person Erica, just so.
Yes, I'm Erica, the co-host of Seaweed Brain.
So that's what's going on right now. Woop woop. But we've got one feedback from last episode, which is about your current favourite book and what you guys are looking through on your podcast currently, The Sun and the Star. But we went right to the end of the book and looked at...
The Cocoa Puffs.
And I was really confused by the Nyx and Nika relationship. I was just confused by it. But we got one response from someone.
Mm.
Well, via Darian, as usual. Hi, Darian. Thanks for playing along with my...
Hi, Darian.
...games. But this is technically a DJ interpretation, but it's via Darian. So, you know, always the fun things. Okay, we have to read things now. This is the hard bit. So, DJ's interpretation is that all darkness is the same. Like, physically, darkness is the same whether you're sealed in a room or the middle of the wood or in a deep cave. Thus, Nyx is the primordial personification of darkness, believes nothing can change because all darkness is the same. Having a deity that is so against change as the antagonist of this book is a very specific choice following Toa that was all about the ability to change and grow. And that leads into my take, this is DJ, that Nico is basically Nyx's thesis. It's been said before that humans can change and gods can't. So Nyx seeks to prove that actually nada can change. And Nico as a human is her best bet to do this, proving it definitively. He carries so much pain and darkness that Nyx can literally create life with it. On Nyx's mind, darkness doesn't change. That said, it's still a very creepy obsession. Yes, I agree. I like this. This made sense to me when I read it. I went, oh. Yeah, that's a fun way to look at it, is Nyx is like, no, darkness is bad and creepy.
Yeah.
Like, That's not. Darkness is the same. Dark is dark. Dark is dark. Like, that's it. Dark is dark. So yeah. She's like, nothing can change because all darkness is the same. So what's this? You like dark things, so you're dark and you will never change. And I have nothing else to say on that topic. Do you want to add anything?
What was the question? Just like about the relationship between Nyx and Nico is supposed to be?
Nyx has a weird obsession with Nico, I think. What did you think of their relationship? Was the obsession weird? That was the literal question I put out there.
Well, this is a horrible answer for this specific podcast because this is like a non-lore answer. But like, I think the thing is that it wasn't like Mark and Rick were like scrolling through all of the characters and were like, oh, it would like Nyx definitely has something obsessive over Nico. And so we're going to write the story about Nyx and Nico. I think it was more that Nico is our queer representation in the Riordan verse and is like this like queer avatar for all of us. And so the enemy that Nico faces, aside from his own PTSD, is like an avatar for the enemy that like queer communities are facing right now, which is the idea of a presence or a person that doesn't want people to change and doesn't want people to grow and is like anti-growth and is anti-queer people being happy and is anti the idea that no one is who, like the theme throughout the book, right, is that no one is who you think they are when you first meet them and that like everyone has something deeper. And Nyx is like this very like shallow surface level kind of character. Like she's basically the stand-in for like, I'm not like certain conservative politicians in America. Yeah. And she's this idea of like anti-change, anti-growth.
For the bigots. Stand in for the bigot.
Yeah. She's like a pseudo bigot character, even though she is mother.
Blood is queen! It's mother! It's Mother!
She is the stand-in for, like, the obstacles that, like, I feel like the queer community is facing.
It's probably correct. However, me being me, I'm like, how does this make sense story-wise?
Absolutely, absolutely. Yes.
Your real-world context is very helpful, but it's like...
It is random.
Yeah, but why... Like, I also understand why Nyx, because it's only one in Tartarus, and...
Yeah, I think that's also part of it, that she just happened to be there, and it kind of had, like, an open-ended story the last time we saw her.
Yeah. Like, it's all good, it's all fun, but I'm also, like, just...
Yeah.
Anyway, we'll move into the actual meat of this episode now. Go! So, what are we going to talk about today? Ghouls and monsters, as if you've read the episode title, is what we're talking about today. People, have a sit down and fun time. So, a while ago, I did an episode on the different types of monsters. What I think was a fun title, and I still stand by it, is Bring On The Monsters, because, you know, it's an Easter egg.
Bring on the monsters! Yes.
And in that episode, I stated something along the lines of, when something goes poof, when killed, it is a monster. Like, that was my... line on it. Yeah, so that views is slightly changed, and I want to dive deeper into what a monster actually is. So this is like a semi, like, first of like a semi two-parter, we'll see. And then I've got like a lot of episodes planned behind the scenes things, guys. I've got actual plans for like the next four episodes that all kind of link together.
That's exciting.
We'll see what happens. Yeah, so this episode is going to look at the reason for like this thought first occurring, and it was thanks to Seaweed Brain, actually. Hence why Erica's here, which is the ghouls in Toa in the Trials of Apollo. Yes, yes, yes. So why specifically are the ghouls slash the Germanic people? I called them ghouls at the start of this episode when I was writing the script. And then I went, oh, yeah, but sometimes they're called the Germani. So I'm just going to refer to them as ghouls, but I'm basically talking about old ancient peoples. So quick history lesson to understand why, like, this is confusing, why make them dusting is weird.
Wait, before we get into the even more confusing part, aren't the Gauls and the Germani different in the Rardenverse? Because Lu is a Gaul, but the Germani are like the big men guards that aren't really given character names.
Yeah, but they're also like, they're different peoples.
Yeah, they're different peoples. They're not the same.
One of them was probably thought of a bit more highly than the others by the Romans. So yeah, they just understood them as two different groups. So when we see them, when we see like Lu, she's a Gaul specifically, and the Germanic, because they look more Germanic. So the Gauls are basically a Celtic group that once controlled an area of mainland Europe. This is now like basically France and then parts of Italy, and it goes west towards Germany as well.
Stupid past. Oh, and it's east, not west. East, never eat shredded wheat, you absolute numbskull.
So that's basically all we know about them, is they're just Celtic tribes that lived in this generic area. Julius Caesar started what is known as the Gallic Wars, basically attacking the tribes because he needed to make some money. You know, let's go pillage some people. So he pillaged gold, gained land. So these people, like Lu, technically or actually existed. These were Celtic mortals that existed in history, and they're not some sort of mythological manifestation of collective human stories that is everything else in these books. So you also get the same, as I mentioned, for the Germani, aka the Germanic people, who were like kind of the Gauls' enemies. They were like further inland towards Germany and stuff. But then when the Gauls got attacked, they came in and took some of their land. They had wars between themselves. I only did a quick span of this because this was the bit that I was like, we can skip it. Basically, we just need to know that Gauls are real people, or were real peoples, that we have historical evidence for. Therefore, why dusting? Why do they go poof?
Oh, and you tell me, because I sure don't know.
We've got to program this, Erica, so you put the question out. Why go poof? Why go poof?
Answer it now.
We'll get to that after this quick interlude. That's now going to be the interlude, just so you know.
Oh, dang.
Why do they go poof? Well, let's see what the books say about them going poof and whatnot. So I think the biggest thing to point out is a quote from Toatun that helps... like contextualize some of this, I think, in a way. So this is the quote. Here's the quote. A few sported injuries that should have made them crumble to ash, but they were no longer creatures of Nero, bound to the living world by his... I wrote that wrong. Bound to the living world by his word. No, I wrote world twice.
Bound to the living world by his power.
Yeah, there we go. Okay. I'm good at comprehension. They were just human again. That's all you need to
know. Oh, that is an important quote.
It's an important quote. So
you're good at this, Owen. This already makes more sense.
So exactly. Making sense. This is something Darian has messaged in about and talked about before. And it leans into the theory that they were immortal and then became mortal again once Nero has been vanquished. So that's that quote is basically saying that, is that they had some tie to Nero and they would live forever with Nero. But when he's died, they are just normal mortals again. They have no magical tie-in. So that's the reason why they don't dust anymore, or what they became. So we're saying that that line suggests that they dust because they were magical connected for some reason. They were somehow connected to the immortal web of Nero and the other triumvirate, and however they became immortal with the collective human consciousness enough, they were like tied to that. Like Nero had like gone, I'm keeping you all alive. It's basically, I guess, this is a new thought that's coming into is how the gods give immortality to people, but Nero specifically could die. So therefore, when he did, they lost their immortality. Does that mean all the mortal gods, when all the gods, they become too godlike? They've been a god for, They weren't, those guys weren't gods. They were just granted immortality. They were more like the hunters of Artemis, but for Nero.
Okay. I don't remember exactly what time period Nero was alive. Do you know off the top of your head?
Off the top of my head, no. Roman.
Pre-Christian. Nero time period. Okay. AD. Okay. But like post, yeah. Okay. Post Jesus, though.
Post Jesus, but pre-Christian, okay. Because they thought he was the devil.
Okay. Yeah. So this is confusing because the Gauls were like peak power, according to Wikipedia, in the 3rd century BC. But I guess, and then the Gallic Wars were like 58 to 50 BC. So they were a little pre-Nero.
But
not that they died, but.
No, but their power was. So we do only actually technically meet one Gaul, and the others are Germanic.
And she's like indebted and to Nero because she used to quote unquote fight for him. I guess that makes sense. Because I feel like, okay, after hearing you say that quote here about them being bound to his power, I feel like it's not that all of the Gauls and all of the Germani from like ancient history in the Percy Jackson Raritan verse are immortal and dust and whatnot. I think it's more that there were like maybe a handful of very specific people who happened to be part of this community of Germani people or Gauls who were working for Nero at the time that he began to gain immortality. And by being connected to him, they just started to gain immortality as well. So it's not like the entire ethnic group is immortal. It's just that there were specific people who were working for him.
Yeah.
And we refer to them by their ethnicity. Does that make sense?
Yes. No, that makes perfect sense. I think my brain had made all those leaps, but didn't realize other people hadn't. So thanks, Erica.
Yeah. Okay. I'm working at a slower pace than Owen, which isn't new. Owen's an engineer. I am not.
You make fun, cool things though. So.
Yeah, like matcha lattes all day long.
But they were mortal and they just happened to get tied. But I've still got the question. That still doesn't answer. So that answered the question of where they come from. And all that sort of jazz. What is that? Why do they dust? What does dusting mean? And like when they dust, where do they go? We can't really answer those questions.
Dust away, where do we go? Sorry, it's a Billie Eilish reference.
Because our assumption is they end up in Tartarus. But that don't feel good. That don't feel right. So they do when they dust, they just die. They just go to Hades or wherever their version of Hades is. Whatever that is. I don't know enough about those mythologies. Yeah, so that's the question. But that's the open air ended stuff. However, I have got a couple other thoughts we can discuss after this. Yes, other thoughts. So there's just some other implications I feel like that this pulls in about talking about what actual dusting actually is and what it could be. So dusting is weird, but like it could imply that monsters like somehow developed this as like a survival method. Because with the Apollo quote, it says they were having injuries that should have crumbled them to ash, dusted them, all the above use of vernacular, made them go poof, as I like to say. Is it like evolution? And they've got this evolutionary like thing, which is a survival tactic that they dust before they actually get a fatal injury. So these creatures never truly die in battle because obviously
they... Whoa, that's so interesting. Because we don't see Percy do a lot of kill shots on monsters.
There's some, I think, that it wouldn't matter because of the whole mythology of it. But for like the large groups, like the Telkines, where it's just the Telkines are a thing, but they still have kids and they still have adults. And theoretically, because they haven't taken over the whole world, they have to have died because exponentialism. So they can't die in battle because they can still get dusted. They still go poof. They still go to Sartus and they still come back up. Is that just a survival method so they can't die in battle? Is it part of like their biology to... Instead of someone like spitting acid in your face, they go poof.
Yeah. Maybe.
Is going poof a way to actually survive? And if that's the case, do the Germani respawn? Because it also does feel like maybe that they have been around for a long time. Unless they've not fought anyone, or they've always won their fights until our gang comes along.
Mm.
How do you replenish them?
No, I was just thinking like, oh, wow, it's so interesting. Again, we're here for the lore on this podcast and not for the like the allegorical meaning behind it. But I never really thought about
the allegorical thing.
Well, maybe I've had this thought and I forgot about it and I'm having it again, which is always fun. But like, it's so interesting that like evil, because I was just thinking when we started this episode about how the different facets of the underworld work and how sort of like I would rather dust than die, because if I'm dying, I'm dead. But if I dust, I get to come back. But if you do go to the underworld, there's a chance for reincarnation. But when you get reincarnated, it's not like you're being reincarnated with your memories and your sense of self. It's just like your life force is being reincarnated. So there's all these like different like pathways you can take when you die or when you dust. But of course, people like monsters are regenerated in Tartarus because evil just continues to regenerate, and like badness and darkness never goes away. It just keeps coming back. But like, of course, like goodness and like heroes and stuff like that, they die and they have like finite endings. Isn't that so interesting?
Yeah.
Like the evil that we fight is always the same evil over and over again. It never truly dies, but people and like...
But the people fighting the good fight have to relearn how to fight it.
Yeah, every single time, which is so interesting.
Yeah, it's...
Yeah.
It's weird.
Beautiful.
I also just thought of a horrible way to make... I don't know, because you were talking about the rebirth thing, and there's like the massive plot hole in The Sun and the Star where Bianca somehow talks to Nico because she's supposed to have had rebirth. And I went, what if she's died again?
Wow. Well, it's not really them. It's just they're dream ghosts.
But they're like Hades dream ghosts. So are they real ghosts? It's questions.
Ooh, does Hades get to, maybe Hades just snapped Bianca's consciousness back into existence for like 2 seconds. But also, how long does reincarnation take? That might not be an immediate thing. It could take you like 100 years to get reincarnated.
But she left. Nico couldn't find her because she ran away. She chose reincarnation to stop him looking for her.
Mm, but she could be like, you know, like her soul could be like floating in the ether in the process of being reincarnated, you know? Is it like the second you choose as a dead soul to become reincarnated, you like close your eyes and you wake up as a baby? I don't know.
Maybe Hades, instead of dipping her, just like ripped it out somewhere and just kept it in a jar just because it was his daughter, you know?
Wait, actually, okay, if we're talking lore, can I headcanon that? That feels really true to me. Like that Hades himself was like, no, like this is one of my only children. Like I will not let this one go again. Like I'm going to
like so she maintain. Got rebirth, but like he also kept a copy of her conscious in a jar.
Oh, like a photocopy. Yeah.
I could see that. His personal, like his collection.
Yeah. Because once she gets rebirthed, she's not his kid anymore, you know? In whatever life, if she shows up as a tree, she's not a tree that's the child of Hades.
No.
It's just like her energy is somewhere else. I don't actually know really a lot of specifics about the Greek version of reincarnation.
They get dipped in the river Lethe. They get reborn. If they die 3 times, they are epic. If they get good 3 times, they're epic.
But when they get reborn, can't they be reborn? Or no, are heroes only reborn as heroes?
I don't know. I don't think we ever.
I'm very curious.
I don't know if in the myths, anyone's listening there that knows the myths very well and would like to weigh in on this tangent, knows if there's a myth about someone that's been reborn, let us know. Thanks.
I would love to know, because I feel like every culture has a different idea about like rebirth and reincarnation, but they're all like, you know, they're all like slightly variations on that theme.
There's only so much you can do with someone being reborn.
Yeah. Let us know.
Yeah. Back on topic, what is dusting? Dusting is fun. What kills them? How do they replenish? Do they come back? Do they stay dead? These are all questions. I think we'll leave up to you guys to work out the answer to, or we'll just never answer because it's full-on speculation. And I've done it in the past. And my personal feeling is that they just die and go wherever they need to go. So like maybe like they've slowly lost their troops over time, but like until our guys come along, it's never been quite so much as so want.
Ooh, I have one last question for you.
Shoot, go.
Okay, so when they dust, when monsters and whomsoever dusts, does that dust just kind of like disappear, and that organic matter just like disappears, or does it become like a pile of dust on the ground somewhere that you could like step into or kick, like ashes?
I guess, okay, hang on, let me think. Let me try and remember things from the books to like lore answer it, not just what I've imagined. So I think they do talk about it like sticking on them, and like that people can be covered in monster dust. So it must stick around, but maybe like it doesn't, it just slowly dissipates. Like it's there for like 2 minutes or so and then just vanishes into the ether.
Mm-hmm. Okay, sure.
We'll see what the TV show does, because then
yes,
that definitive answer.
I feel like ever since Infinity War, everyone has been envisioning it like the last few minutes of Infinity War. At least I have. I don't know what I thought it looked like before then, but...
gold sparkly dust. Like
glitter. Yeah, I used to think it was like the shower of gold, like what happened to Sally Jackson. But now all I see is the like light brown, like ashy dust flakes.
Who knows? We'll see what they chuck in the show.
Yeah.
Thank you for indulging this theory. If you have any comments on this theory or theories of your own that you want me to discuss, you can email them through foo.t.myth@gmail.com, or you can follow the Instagrams @foo_myth. Make sure to like the podcast, subscribe to the podcast, whatever you have to do to help get the podcast out there. I've been Owen. You've been
Erica.
And come back next time as we try to see through the myth. My myths are rare.